Georgical, the UAE's first regular legal podcast. I'm Tim Elliott, and as ever, I'm here with Ludmilla Yamalova, managing partner at Yamalova and Pleska here in JLT. Ludmilla, good to see you.
Good to see you too, Tim. Thanks for being back here.
Now, today, I looked at this topic and I thought, I don't know where to start with this, but actually, I see why you want to talk to it. It's really important for professionals in the UAE, complexities surrounding training costs in UAE employment law. Slightly cumbersome title, but there's a lot here. How are these costs defined? What are the rights of employers versus employees? How do the courts view attempts by employers to reclaim these costs when an employee resigns? So we're going to explore a significant recent court case. No names, of course, but I want to start, Ludmilla, with the basics. What would be considered legitimate training costs in the context of UAE employment law?
So the legitimate training costs, as you rightfully said in the UAE employment law, is basically training costs which refer to expenses that an employer, that is the company, would incur for programs that enhance or improve an employee's skills beyond the scope of their immediate job duties. So these may include specialized courses, certificates or certifications, training programs, that impart valuable transferable skills. And this is, by the way, key, that sort of transferable skills and that applicable beyond the current role. So, and obviously there's a number of criteria that are attached to that, but specific definition and definition of, what's a training cost. So in order to be legitimate, they should meet specific criteria. Sort of at a high level, one is that they have to be a sort of direct financial outlay by the employer, meaning that the employer must have paid for the training cost directly, and not out of their own kind of, from one pocket to another, but actually they paid to an outside party. And there should also be documentation to provide that, also to prove that expense. So that's one. Two, specialized and transferable skills. So the training should provide skills and qualifications that employee can use outside of their current jobs, not just the skills that are required for their existing job. Three, written agreements. And in other words, there has to be an underlying agreement that's clear and pre-agreed document which specifies the training costs and the repayment terms for those costs assigned by both parties, but certainly the employee. And then four, sort of also relevance to the role development. And that is the training should be aimed at professional development rather than routine job training. So that's kind of at a high level is the definition of legitimate training costs, or rather the criteria for what would constitute legitimate training costs for the courts to consider the obligation, requested, alleged obligation by the employee to compensate the company for those expenses.
So we're talking about potential disagreements, employers on one side, employees on the other side, for a change, I guess. But what might be common misconceptions when it comes to training, actual training costs?
So one common misconception is that all forms of training can be reimbursed if an employee resigns. And that, by the way, is the reason why we're talking about this today, although we get these questions from our many followers all the time. And that is, I'm resigning, and as a penalty, and my employer is wanting either that I reimburse them, or they want to offset or subtract training costs from my end of service. So what do I do?
Yeah.
And that's the employers often include these very broad clauses in contracts that attempt to classify any job-related training as reimbursable. But by now, the UAE courts have they have established fairly clear legal foundation in terms of what is considered to be reimbursable, what is not. And generally, they assess whether the training goes beyond fulfilling an employee's basic job responsibilities. And so, for example, so routine on-the-job training, such as internal workshops and orientations, do not typically qualify as a reimbursable expense unless explicitly stated in the contract and backed by evidence. And so here is Yeah, I guess in other words to describe that is, let's say I hire you to work for me, right? And I hire you to you are working for me. So to, let's say you had to do podcasts with me, right? But you have never done podcasts with me wishful thinking. So in a legal context, and you might have never done podcasts with a law firm before, but you were an experienced podcaster. And so I'm going to hire you to work for me. Now, you know your trade, but obviously for you to be able to be an effective podcaster, you also need to understand what we are about our practice, about our team, how we work. And as part of that, there'll be a lot of training. You will have to learn what it is that we do as a practice. Mm-hmm. Who are we as a team? What our approach is with clients, what our protocol, even internal protocols are, how we work as a team in terms of how we communicate with clients, how we communicate with one another, how we update our and keep and manage our workflow, how we keep our time, our working hours, and so on and so forth. Each one of those is basically a type of training, right? Mm-hmm. And especially if we are using, if we want you to use, which is the case with us, like specific tools that we have adopted as a practice for our employees. And we have so many different tools and systems that we use as a firm. So you will need to have to be trained in that. So that is training. All of that is training, and some of it will actually require for you to even perhaps take certain courses that maybe like courses that we've even kind of either recorded ourselves, kind of done ourselves, or have found beneficial for our employees to listen, to understand better, right? And there could be costs with that. So those costs I've just described and those trainings associated, even if we've paid for them, these systems, and it may even be possible that because of all the training I just described to you, I thought it would be more efficient if I bring somebody else, like a freelancer, to teach you all that versus me taking my time to do it because I could use my time to do something else. Mm-hmm. So however, all of that, even if I were to pay freelancers, are not really reimbursable expenses. Why? Right. Because all those trainings are required for you to do your job. So, and therefore, so there's two parts to it. One, they're required for you to do your job, to do your job for me. And so therefore, it's not reimbursable. And then two, it's like in many cases, by the way, many of the employers' cases, it doesn't even require for them to pay money out of pocket to anyone else to perform that training or for you to go through this training. So those kinds of costs are not reimbursable. And that's basically the context in which we're talking about. So the only cost that would be reimbursable is Tim came, you're my podcaster, and you decided that you want to increase your skills by also doing, maybe getting an advanced degree. I don't need that degree for you to do your job well. Sure. But because we have a good relationship, I believe in you, I want to invest in you. So I offered to pay for your, at least parts of your training, or you asked me to. So that cost would be reimbursable, in short.
Okay, that's pretty clear. I'd mentioned that we talk about a recent court case, and I know that obviously we need to change the names to protect the innocent and everything else. Are you happy to talk about
sure.
this particular case?
Yes,
this
of course.
Is really interesting, I think.
Yes, indeed. And this is also, it's been on my mind for a long time that we've wanted to display this because there's so many people that are coming with these very examples, right? It's just one client, but that client ultimately led a number of other clients to our firm. And then there's many other clients with similar complaints have come forward. And then recently, also through our social media, we keep seeing the same questions fast forward so many years. So that's why it's good to use this particular example, because also in this case, there's a whole team of employees. They were all subject to these kinds of onerous provisions and limitations in terms of training costs. And that practice had obviously existed for a long time and was a fairly reputable employer as well. So what it made it more interesting because of, its how big scale it was.
Right, right.
So in this case, we had a plaintiff who was working for a company from 2017 on a 3-year contract. So it's until 2020. And he resigned actually a year into his second contract. So he renewed it. So worked for another, I think, year and a half. So it's like 3 years plus another 3 years. And so the dispute was centered on a training bond, which he, the employer, the company was required for him, was insisting that he repay. And the training bond was not insignificant. That was almost like 180,000 dirhams, so which is about $40,000, more than that. And that was for some sort of specialized training. So, and then the employee argued that this was not specialized, any kind of training. That there was, in fact, that there was no training at all, that they were just basically doing their job and working, and there was no training, let alone external training, let alone training that the company would have paid for them. That being said, when the employee did accept the job, there was some sort of a training bond agreement, which they were asked to sign. So they had signed. And that's what the company kept using against them. You've signed a contract here that said that you will reimburse the company for this training bond, and the training bond is this amount. It was over that particular case that this client came, and we took it to court and ultimately won. And since then, a number of other cases sort of follow suit. But it's the court has been very consistent in its conclusion and its principles and precedents that it's set. And that's ultimately the court, among other things, appointed an expert. And basically, they kind of examined the type of training, the documents that were presented, and ultimately concluded that the employer, the company, did not provide any evidence that any kind of sort of the specialized training took place. One, and two, that any kind of expenses were actually even spent for this training. Because you can have a specialized training, right? Or you can have training, but you may not have an expense, right? Or you might have paid for something, but it was not actually a specialized training. So it could be one or the other. But in this case, there was no specialized training, nor any kind of receipts to support that some kind of money left the company to pay for this training.
What criteria did the court emphasize for determining the legitimacy of training costs in this case?
Also, there's several. One is there was evidence of payment, and there's so clear contractual terms, and also just the timing of the agreement kind of versus training as well, as that was important. Because remember, how much training do you do? So if you worked in this particular case, the employee worked for the company for almost 5 years. So how much more training? You already worked your 5 years. So how much more training do you need to do to still after these 5 years to reimburse the company still for something? So because the idea here is, let's say if the company did give you some sort of specialized training early on and paid for it, then you've already going to give it back to the company. You already contributed to the company.
And this was a person employed to do one particular job for this company without any
very specialized
special follow-up.
This is a very specialized profession, very specialized scope of work. So a very sort of specialized industry. There wasn't like, I'm a lawyer and now I want to learn how to paint and I want to learn how to make music and I want my employer to ask me to pay for those kinds of courses. No. This is very, very specialized, and all this employee did is just when that's in the same specific area. And by the way, in this case and all the other employees specifically that came kind of from this industry, they're highly experienced employees. These are not newbies. We're talking about people with 20 some years of experience. So, and it's a very specialized, very niche area. So when you come there, like, it's not like you just came from university. You don't know how to use basic, Microsoft tools, for example, or you don't know how to read a particular law, for example. These people with experience, and they stuck with the same experience. That's the only experience. It's a very technical and specialized area of business. Yeah, so it was that. That was one thing. So the court looked at, it's one thing if, let's say, the employee started and the company claimed some sort of training and the employee resigned 3 or 4 months later after the company would have committed this training if it had. So that was one of the factors. So here the employee had worked for 5 years. So whatever training he would have received, he's already given back to the company. He's already reimbursed the company by virtue of his contributions. The other one is the evidence of payment, as we talked about. And an employer should be able to show that it paid for the training through invoices, receipts, or financial records. And then also there has to be a specific agreement that calls for repayment obligation. And in other words, just let's say, even if, let's say, going back to your example, I decide to pay for your course to get a master's degree in something, but just because we've done, you know, because I've paid for this and this is not an essential training for you to do your job for me, and I actually paid a third party, but just because those two things happen does not mean that that's that expense is reimbursable if you and I don't have an underlying document agreeing to it, right? So in addition to that, so it's like three criteria, if you will. One is that the training has to be very specialized to very specialized beyond your regular job duties. And then two, that it has to be actual expense to the third party for the training that you need to be able to evidence. And then also three, we have to have an agreement of how this, what this training cost might be and how it's going to be reimbursed. Because another element to it is that, let's say you wanted this training and I said, fine. And the training was at 1,000,000 dirhams. So if you had known how much it was, you would have never agreed to it, for example, right? So that's why this is underlying agreement is so important. And there has to be an agreement, mm-hmm. the documents that we have agreed to, you've agreed to compensate me. But the agreement in itself, because by the way, remember in that employee's case, there was an agreement for reimbursement, but it was basically, it was a dummy agreement. It was fictitious because the transaction didn't actually take place. There was no evidence to substantiate the objective and the substance of the agreement, which was there was no specialized training and it was not essential. It was not essential to and the company did not pay for it, but there was an agreement. But so it's all three parts or three elements that are required.
So what are the lessons for employees from this case?
Well, yes. Yeah, so, well, the courts in this case and in subsequent cases have reaffirmed that basically they need to look at clear evidence that the training expenses were both substantial and incurred by the employer to qualify as a legitimate cost that are eligible for reimbursement. It goes back to devil is in the detail.
Yep.
So, you know, one, obviously, review contracts very thoroughly. Understand the any training costs clauses and the conditions before signing and before agreeing to them. Because once you have your signature to the agreement, then you also have to kind of answer to it at least. Then two, don't be afraid to seek clarification. If you don't understand what it means or you don't agree before you take the job, don't be afraid to question it and seek answers to whatever questions you may have. And so also ensure the clarity of, you know, what constitutes reimbursable training and that, you know, and that you agree with that definition and ensure that, you know, the training that if you are agreeing to a particular clause, that the training has to also be substantiated by evidence that there was some kind of a cost to the company, to the employer that would have been spent for that training. And then ultimately also kind of evaluate the fairness of it. So, you know, if you think that, you know, the company really actually gave you some kind of valuable training that didn't have to give to you, didn't have to pay so that early on in the job, that, you know, it's you can kind of decide whether, you know, how you want to deal with that and vice versa. If you think that it would be beneficial for you to have this training beyond just you know, for this job and beyond other jobs, that, you know, maybe it's worthwhile for you to agree. But again, remembering those the three elements, that it still has to be substantiated,
mm-hmm.
You know, and there has to be some kind of a document that outlines the terms of the repayment, and that also those terms are reasonable. Because if you worked, as I use example, if you worked for 5 years, I mean, is it reasonable for the company to expect you to reimburse training expenses that they might have actually incurred on year one?
I see where you're going with that. So that's the employee. What about the lessons for the employer?
Very similar lessons. So one is obviously clearly document the costs. So if you are, as a company, investing in your employees, good on you. But make sure that you document those costs and maintain very comprehensive records and ensure that all the agreements that you have your employees sign that align with ultimately the timing of their term of employment and also the quality of their training. Then also another thing in this, by the way, we've seen is avoid retroactive clauses. We have seen retroactive clauses as employers at some point in time decide, okay, we want to get employees to reimburse us for something or the other. So, I mean, these kind of retroactive clauses, and employees at that point in time have to sign only because they don't want to lose their job. But if this were ever litigated, the courts would, such agreements would weaken the employer's case. In many cases, the courts would actually invalidate those agreements as well. And then, you know, be transparent as a company, clearly communicate the purpose in the terms of the training, and the repayment terms to avoid disputes. Most importantly is just understand, so what is considered to be legally or legitimately a reimbursable expense and what isn't. And I also understand as a company that anytime you hire an employee, which, that there is, you know, there's a presumption of certain period of time during which there is training that's ongoing for all new employees. And that's the training that's not reimbursable. But most importantly, I will tell you, perhaps this is kind of a wrap up, is that, in the cases I've just shared and the cases that we see from a lot of other clients, it's less about the company not having the right records. It's more about the company using these kinds of clauses punitively. Mm. It's basically to punish employees or to dissuade employees from actually leaving. So it's a punishment for employees for resigning. So that's how, in most cases that we have seen, training costs, training bonds that are being applied or enforced by companies, it's basically as a penalty or as a punishment for employees to leave the company. And that's not legal. That's against the law. There are specific provisions in the law that clearly state that any kind of training, any sort of expenses that are essential to the employee to do their job are the cost of the company or the employer. And that's just the cost of doing business.
That is logical. Training costs in UAE employment law. Thank you for listening and watching, or both if you're with us on YouTube. And as always, thanks to Ludmila Yamalova, managing partner here at Yamalova and Plethka. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim.
Appreciate it. Find us across social media, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, LinkedIn, wherever you get your social updates and wherever you find your podcasts as well. Our website is there too. It's full of UAE-centric legal information. If you'd like a legal question answered by a qualified and UAE-experienced legal professional or in an episode of Logical, click contact at lylawyers.com.